Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behavior in a business context. Season 2 of Misbehave is all about uncovering behavioral patterns which create success in life and business. We're joined by highly driven, accomplished individuals to assess their behavioral patterns and dive into how behaviors have influenced their journey. This episode features Atul Malhotra, CEO of hugely successful Malhotra Group. Now employing over 2,000 people, Atul shares his journey growing a second-generation family business with big aspirations. We talk about everything from Atul's unique behavioral mix to how he made his mark on an already successful family business to the essential lessons and support that have shaped his career along the way. Well, welcome, Atul. We're really pleased to have you with us today. I want to kick off with a question of, and we're going to get into your career and obviously the business. Tell us a little bit about, if you had to summarize 2 big wins in your career so far, what would they be?
First of all, thanks for having us on. Career wins. Mm-hmm. I'll give you 2 life wins first.
Yeah.
That's my 2 girls and my wife, Natalie. 2 career wins. That's a tough question. First up, I think a generic career win is being responsible for the best part of 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's stress, it's a huge responsibility, but it certainly gives you an excuse to get out of bed every day. If you want a more specific career win, I think being recognised in Asian Power List recently, as a family, being recognised as Northeast in Yorkshire entrepreneur. And more specifically, I opened a restaurant recently named after my eldest daughter, Leila Lee's on Grey Street. So that they're quite significant, career aspiring, rewarding things to be recognised by your peers and also being recognised as having some of the best bars and pubs in the Northeast. So, yeah, it's rewarding after all the hard work you put in.
Yeah. And I think people see that, I think especially with what the Northeast is known for, people see that external piece, don't they? They see sort of that, the front end of leisure and hospitality, but actually forget all of the stuff that happens in the background.
Oh yeah, it's the hospitality industry is really rewarding if you get it right, but it's the hard work behind the scenes. And Newcastle for a while was always known as a party place, but then, you know, recently it also got a bit of a bad publicity as well. But considering we're way out from London, we're punching our weight in terms of competing with the bigger cities like Manchester, Leeds and Liverpool.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about the journey to joining the family business, because, you know, it's one that we actually work with quite a lot of family businesses, and it's really interesting the journey that people go on. You know, they grow up in the business. It's almost like you don't just join it. But I'm interested in that journey that you went through of sort of just organically merging into that as you were younger, but then that deliberate break that you took to step out, go get some experience, come back. Because often that's quite unusual. You know, people sort of merge into a family business and there's pros and cons to both of that. So just talk to us a little bit about, you know, from you growing up there to where you are now, what that journey's felt like and what were some of the pivotal points?
You're right. I grew into the business growing up. We used to be in the rag trade a long time ago. We used to have clothing shops. So the routine was getting picked up from school and then going to the shop to see mum and dad and being dragged around, going to Manchester on weekends to get new clothes from warehouses to sell that particular week. It was a week-to-week thing. And then dad had a portfolio of flats in Benwell and I used to get dragged around on weekends to go and collect the rents. And it just sort of spiraled from there, summer holidays, Easter holidays. Work ethic was a huge thing drilled into me by my parents. We used to go to school in Jesmond, and my dad's first ever care home was in Jesmond. We've still got that. So every day walking after school to the care home, I can still remember to this day, one of our members of staff, Joan, used to pick me up from school and walk me where my mum used to manage the care home back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I think growing up, I never really wanted to go to university. I didn't get the greatest grades. I was pretty bad academically. And after persuasion from my father, he said, look, just go to uni, you'll regret it. Failed the first year, didn't really want to be there. Always interested in the family business. But I decided to reset, passed, and I purposefully took a course that allowed me to do a placement abroad So my third year, I travelled to America, Atlanta, and worked for an Asian family business who had various hospitality interests in and around Atlanta. So I worked there for 12 months, lived in one of their hotels, worked in their hotels, and then worked in, you know, most facets of their group. Yeah. And I loved it, really enjoyed it. And I think that set me up quite nicely to finish my final year and really focus, knuckle down and join the business. And at that point, the business had grown from obviously when I was in my teens to my early 20s. We'd aggressively sort of expanded, and I was really interested in the hospitality side of the business. And but before I joined that, again, going back to work ethic, I worked in every single department of the business, from working in security, 12-hour shifts, 16-hour shifts. And Dad wanted us to sort of knuckle down and understand every department of the business and grow it, and didn't really have much of a process or systems in place, whether it was IT or HR. So I just slowly grew those functions as the business evolved, as we got more businesses and the staff number grew. And so I was very much hands-on in terms of the day-to-day office management, setting up structures, and then eventually, with the help of other family members and growing my team, we embarked on a large hospitality expansion and various other bits.
So you were potentially abroad, learning all these new things, and then coming back into the family business. How were you able to influence or shape the future of the family business after you returned?
I'm still trying to answer that question now. The dynamic of a family business is really difficult.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really rewarding. It has far more positives than negatives. Dad's an old school entrepreneur, and so is my Uncle Bunty. They came to this country in their late teens from India with nothing. And my dad established a business, and it just grew very, very quickly. But our processes probably lacked. And so when I came into the business, one of my major pieces of work was to introduce departments and processes and try to do things properly, professionally. And it was difficult, but we eventually got there. And it's a constant, it's not a constant battle, but it's just one of those things that you do constantly. You have to improve as a business, as a group, as owners. You've got to set examples, and you've got to allow people to make mistakes and not micromanage them, and let them get on with it. And luckily and fortunately, Dad has insulated us with a really good team, and he just allows us to get on with it. He's not really involved in the business day to day anymore. He's working on different projects internationally, and he's there in the background. He's more of a, I don't know, he's more probably, best describe him as an agony aunt. He's there. Yeah. He allows me to get on with it, but that comfort of knowing he's still there. And the same with my Uncle Bunty. He's more involved in the care side of the business. But it's nice to know that they're both still there. And if I do need their advice,
You've got that.
That it's there, because obviously they know the business better than me. They're a lot more experienced than me in a lot of things.
And you highlighted something there, which I think is interesting that I want to touch on a little bit. And it's something that, to be honest, it's a fairly rare lineup of behaviours that we see. But it's one that actually is really complementary, that you've got obviously a massive dominance towards big picture and that vision piece. But then you've also got quite a skew towards process. Now, doing what you do and the way you just described that there, when you described almost spotting what procedures needed to go in place and where different parts of the business maybe needed additional infrastructure or bolstering, it highlights that. But it's an interesting combination, because often what we see with entrepreneurs is they've got that vision piece, but they lack the process. And, you know, often people bypass that by bringing others in. But that combination is really interesting. Talk us through a little bit around how you combine that with that vision, but actually then putting the processes in place.
I think growing up, there was a lack of process. Mm-hmm. And I think that frustrated me quite a lot. And, credit to my dad and Uncle Bunty, they let me just get on with it. And it evolved and it grew. And one thing I've learned from them both is there's a process to everything. Something as simple as taking a keg delivery in, It's not a case of just getting your kegs delivered. You've got to count them. You've got to tick them off against your order and make sure none are missing and put them in the cellar properly in date order.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, four or five small things about a keg delivery that some people might not even understand or realize looking from outside in. So there's a process to literally everything that you do. And I was finding that a lot of our internal issues and a lot of our problems were all self-inflicted. And it really frustrated me. If something went wrong and you chewed the fat on it and analyzed why it went wrong, a lot of it is down to our own self-infliction, lack of discipline, lack of process. So, yeah, process is something really, really important. You know, we're going through a small minor refurb at Lay Lilies later on this month, and it's not a case of just having a refurb. It's a case of you've got your new financial year starting. You need a refurb. You need to close in that period. You've got to train the staff. There's new menus, new pricing, new costings, and a bit of a reset. You know, it's not just a refurb. Yeah. So it's very process driven. Everything that I try and do, there needs to be a process behind it. I think where my process drive comes from is also I suffer massively from OCD and anxiety, and I like to know what goes on.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe a little bit too much, but there needs to be a process behind majority of things that you probably do in life, not just at work, at home as well.
And I think that's interesting, isn't it? Because actually one of the things when people say to us, you know, I struggle to delegate, or most of the businesses we work with are scaling pretty substantially. And often what we're seeing is we're seeing transitions from people that were owner-operators actually into you can't, you know, you're going to get really tired really quickly if you're an operator in a business. And how do you grow into actually a CEO or an MD that stepped back and processes the answer to that? But I think too often with that, people blame it on, we have a bit of a saying that it's not a people issue, it's a process issue. You can't say it's a people issue until you figured out that there's a process there, and then someone's just deliberately not following it, then it's a people issue.
Yeah, I'm totally right. My delegation has got better. I'm very hands-on as an owner. I think that's just with the work ethic that's been drilled into me ever since I was young. But touch wood, I'm surrounded by some really good people, whether it's in the ops team or senior people within the office. And I'm not very much title-driven. Fortunately, I'm one of the owners of a strong family business, but I'm not really into titles. I think my job is really simple. What I tell my team and our staff is, my job is to give you guys the tools for you to do your job. And if I'm not giving you the tools, and I'm not giving you the structure or the process or the environment, then I'm failing as a
boss.
You're
not doing your job,
Yeah, thanks for sharing that piece around, you know, some of that is driven by the fact that anxiety can kick in, or if that OCD piece, it's something that has come up a lot recently with people we've spoken to, because often it's driven by the need for control. Or in your case, your profile tells us that you like to lead, and you want to lead and be seen to be taking that lead and lead by example. You used those words earlier. And sometimes with that control, when it's serving you, it's fantastic. You've got the structure, you're finding the problems, you're solving them, you're leading by example, you're rolling your sleeves up, you're getting in the trenches with the team. Sometimes where we see, it's certainly with people running businesses where they're multifaceted, or you've got lots of businesses in a group, it can spiral quite quickly, and your headspace is so busy that it's difficult to switch off and be able to take a pause and breathe. How do you do that?
I used to find that hard. I still find it really difficult. I think since my girls have come into my world, I'm better, but still not great. If you speak to my wife, I do find it really hard to switch off, particularly if I'm in Newcastle. I tend to only switch off and relax if I'm out of Newcastle. If I go down to London and see my brother, or away for a weekend or abroad, I go to sleep about midnight, get up about 6:30, and it's generally emails till the lights go off, and emails as soon as you wake up.
It's not a 9-to-5 business, right? So it's like you're not shutting the doors at 5 o'clock. You've got most of your, on the hospitality side of the business, most of your customer will happen in sort of those hours that you're at home with your family.
And it's not a control thing, because I'm not a control freak. I want everything to be perfect, but nothing in this world is perfect, but you can strive for it at least. And it's just, again, going back, it's that work ethic which has always been drilled into me. I don't see it as my job. It's a passion. It's something that I love to do. It's a reason I get up every morning, apart from obviously my immediate family, my wife and my kids. I like getting up and going to work and troubleshooting and problem solving and giving the staff the platform to succeed, because they are the business.
Yeah.
You know, it's my business in name only, but it's their business. We're surrounded by some real loyal staff that have worked for us for, you know, 20, 30 years.
If you're curious to know more about your leadership behaviours, click the link in our show notes to get 20% off a leadership DNA profile.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like to be part of a group? Because we've got lots of listeners listening, either running a business or maybe have a multifaceted business, have a group. But you have lots going on. How do you juggle that? And how do you divide your time, prioritization and accountabilities across the group?
I'm quite hands-on, so you generally have a touch and a feel of what's going on in your group. My dad's very much, you know, a helicopter view, and that's something that I'm trying to learn and move into. But with hospitality, it's very much hands-on. It is difficult. It does cause arguments at home with my wife. I am trying to get better. Still not there yet. Still got a long way to go. But yeah, the dynamic of looking after a vast group, but you've got to trust your staff. You can't be involved in everything. And, you know, we have regular meetings and I'm only ever a phone call away. And I'm pretty proactive on the phone. But yeah, that I'm still trying to come to, that's a constant battle, because, yeah, you know, my kids are on the verge of being 7 and 5. And that's scary enough as it is, because that's flown by. And, you know, before you know it, they're not going to really want their dad around anymore. And so that is scary, in that if I'm at home, I need to be present. And sometimes I'm not, and I am tough on myself, but I need to be certainly a lot more aware of that and a bit more disciplined. So yeah, that's something I'm still working on. I think it's something that you've got to work on every day.
For sure. It's the prioritisation bit that even we struggle with in our business, as to where to put our efforts. Do you tend to get drawn to the areas that are problematic? Because we, looking at your map, we know that you like to problem solve and you'll dive in and want to sort through the challenges. Do you tend to prioritise your time on that? Or is it a bit more sort of you allocate your time across all of the different areas?
No, I'm in a good position, in a good place where I'm not firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the success of an entrepreneur and a business and an owner is trying to foresee problems down the road. And I'm always constantly supporting the staff and thinking, right, worst case scenario a little bit. I think with business, you've got to be optimistic, but at the same time, it's a nice blend of being realistic. And when it comes to certain things, I am pessimistic. Yeah. And that's just the way I am and the way I've evolved as a business owner. So you do think worst case scenario, and you do think, okay, well, what happens if that happens in 6 months? What's the backup? How can you tweak it? What can you do? Are you going to, it could be someone leaves, you're going to move someone up, you're going to promote someone. And so I'm always thinking ahead, if that makes sense. It was very much thinking about the present and now and firefighting. But over the past few years, my role has involved, with the help of appointing some really good senior people. So now it's thinking about the future.
Yeah. And it's interesting to look at your map. I know we talked a little bit earlier around that procedure, big picture mix. Whenever we look at maps, there's almost two types of leaders, right? The visionary leader and then the integrator. And usually you need both in a business. You need the person that sees the vision, drives the ideas, drives the culture, all of that. Then you need the integrator who integrates the plan, makes sure that it happens, puts the process in place. And there's four patterns on the map that essentially tell us whether you're visionary or integrator. And actually, you've got 50-50, which is quite unusual. So you've got high big picture, high initiation, which means you're a driver of action on things. But then you've got that challenge focus piece that is the problem solving, which is a bit more of an integrator thing, and the process. So
yeah,
you're really nicely balanced on that, and that's quite unusual. Usually we see people with 3 or 4 one way or 3 or 4 the other way. They kind of sit more as a true visionary or a true integrator. And I think that it really speaks with the role that you've got and you've developed of, let's look at the problems and let's put the processes in place, but actually we also need to see the vision and we need to drive things forward. So it's quite a nice,
a lovely combination
mix.
Yeah.
And it's not that usual. So unique.
So it's quite unique. Yeah. And that's what Atul means as well.
Yeah.
Ah,
really?
Is it?
Interesting.
It means unique, one of a kind, yeah.
Wow. He's a unicorn. And we didn't know it.
And your map shows that.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to seeing this map.
I'm interested in the transition. You know, you talked before about one of the ladies that works for me used to pick you from school. And we've got at least three or four businesses that we work with where it's family, right? And they've struggled in differing forms with that piece of some of the staff knew me when I was a kid and actually almost became like an estranged auntie or uncle, or, you know, there was almost that caregiving role. And now I'm their boss. And that transition between that and the value of having, you know, a lot of us are brought up with that value of they're your elders and you respect them. But then sometimes that blurs the boundaries when you've grown up in a business with people who were caregiving for you that you now manage. Talk us through a little bit how you've managed that and what the challenges have been.
Yeah, there is scenarios like that in the business. We've got some very senior people that work in the office that have been there since day one. And they've seen me grow up since I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years mm-hmm. old. And again, I don't like to use the word I'm the boss.
Yeah.
I'm a fellow work colleague.
Yeah.
That's the dynamic and the relationships that I have with a lot of our senior team. I'm their boss in name and that's it, really.
Yeah.
They're employed because they're better than me at a lot of things. And I think the most important thing is if you need to surround yourself with better people. You know, you don't want to have that insecurity of employing people that are just going to be puppets or not going to bring anything to the table. You succeed by surrounding yourself with better people. And fortunately for us, we've got some amazing people that work for us. Proud to have them on board. And, you know, we're a family. We're a family of 2,000 people. That's how we've always, since I've joined the business, I've always had that vision and, you know, that ethic that we're in this together.
It's interesting, isn't it, the piece around 2,000 people. That's a lot of people to employ. And typically, obviously, in care and in hospitality, there's this sort of acknowledgement that it can sometimes be quite a transient role where people come for a period of time and then they go on and do something else. How do you manage to create a good culture in the sector that you're in now?
Fortunately for us, on our hospitality side of the business, which is probably the smaller sector of our business, majority of my senior ops team and my site managers, they've all worked for me for years. So the senior leadership team hasn't really changed.
Okay.
You know, they're loyal. I must be a half decent boss and stick around.
You're doing something right.
I try and look after them. But you're right, some of our sites are very transient. Students, part-time, doing it for an extra bit of pocket money. So that is difficult because in some sites you see different staff constantly. But because I'm quite hands-on and I like to visit my sites, you do just get to know staff constantly. It's up to the managers to sort of, what I try and create at a senior level, it's up to them to create that at a lower level. But they do see the owner very, very often because I do visit my sites all the time. Mm.
What do you think, if you could name one thing, what do you do with those managers that you think has got them to stay? Because I think that's, you know, you're almost flippant about that. It's like, would they just stay? But even, you know, in the businesses that we see, even in any business, there's still often fairly regular turnover at that senior level. Do you think, are there any things purposefully that you do, other than obviously being present, you're obviously really present with them, that you think has driven some of that loyalty?
I don't think that's just my responsibility. I think we've got three senior owners, my dad, my Uncle Bunty and myself.
Yeah.
We do have other family members involved in the business as well. But I think that just goes back to the family work ethic. We try and look after our staff as best we possibly can. I've always been a big believer in that. And mm-hmm. I think we do see the rewards of that. We, touch wood, don't have much of a staff turnover when it comes to the senior team, and even on site as well. I don't know what it is I specifically do. You'll have to probably ask them.
I think you've just summed it up. I think that, like, that willingness to try. I know that sounds, it sounds so, for, to you, probably feels quite basic, but I think sometimes people, it's that willingness to care, right?
It's just, if they have a problem, it's my problem too.
Yeah.
And it's always, look, how can I support you? What do you need off me this week to help you? You know, where can I help you? Where can I guide you? And it's not so much telling them what to do. It's asking them, right, okay, how would you do this? And one of my favourite lines is, okay, if I'm not here, how would you do this?
The coach role.
And they'll, you know, they'll say, okay, they'll talk it out with me and we'll role play. And I'll be like, you've got A, B, C, D, right? Tweak X, Y, Z, and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so for next time, they don't need to come to me, they just get on with it.
You've empowered them with the knowledge.
You have to empower your staff. You've got to allow them, and they will make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, try not to make the same mistake. I'd rather you come and make a different mistake. But you have to allow staff to get on with it. You've got to trust them. And I think for a long time, my dad and Uncle Bundy probably didn't have that. But slowly or surely now, they're just, you know, allowing people to get on with it. And I think that's where I've come in and took more of a role within the office. But we've got a really strong SMT group, senior management team, where there's, you know, six or eight of us, what I refer to as leaders of the business.
And it's really, you know, you've got those people patterns in you. Looking at your map, Atul, you've got proximity, which means you really like to work collaboratively, that when you beautifully describe wanting to get in there and see people and say, you know, in person, that's driven by that behavioural pattern. It comes out loud and clear. We often get asked, like, what makes a good leader? And we always say it comes in lots of different ways. And actually, what you're saying is your leadership style is more around that coaching, empowerment, getting great people behind you, creating trust and loyalty. And that does speak for a lot, because that drives your workforce to want to work for you. It's leadership in a way where I lead and people follow because they want to be part of it. And it's a really interesting way. You know, we talk to lots of different people and people do lead in different ways, but that coaching piece can't be underestimated. And most leaders will do some of that.
Yeah.
That empowerment piece where you're encouraging people to make decisions. And actually, it's okay if it's not always the right decision, but we can learn from that and move forward. If you were to describe, like, one of your biggest challenges along your journey, what would that be? What's been your biggest challenge to date?
I think being one of the leaders of a business, you're there to motivate all your staff, but sometimes who's there to motivate you? And so sometimes, I wouldn't say a lack of motivation, but sometimes you're not always 100%, and that's fine. People have problems, personal problems, and it's very easy to say, leave your personal problems at the door. But it's human nature, you know, and that's probably one of the biggest ones. Is sometimes it's that, not lack of motivation, sometimes, you know, I'm tired, I can't be bothered. It's a bit like going to the gym. I went to the gym today, I couldn't be bothered, really couldn't. But afterwards, it was amazing. I felt brilliant, you know, a different outlook I had. And I think at work sometimes that's when you reach out to your mentors or your wife or go for a walk or take a weekend away and just recharge your batteries or just take half a day away from the business and just sort of have a reset.
Yeah.
And I do that regularly, and I do have two or three mentors I do reach out to and have a natter and a whinge, and, you know, and they're there just to help me reset, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested in your techniques for balancing work and family, because we have that challenge. Now, we're not family by blood, but we're family by chosen. And we have had to do a lot of work over the years about being really purposeful with, where do we draw that line between, we've had a tough day at work, we've maybe had some difficult conversations with each other, now we have to go and be the family side of that. And obviously there's two of us, there's more for you. How do you navigate that?
With difficulty. No, I'm joking. It is tough working with your dad, my Uncle Bunty, myself, other siblings in the family, my brother, my sister, my cousins. And at the end of the day, we're a close-knit family. So you're still, you know, that love and respect for one another is there. And you try not to get too personal at work, but Yeah, I do argue with my sister at work and my brother at work, and I don't always agree with Uncle Bundy and my dad. And that dynamic of at 6 o'clock, okay, the office is closed, it's time to go home. We all live next door to each other. We do see each other regularly. But I think it's not personal. We're doing what we think is the best for the business. And not all my ideas are the right ones. Same with my dad, same with Uncle Bundy, my brother, my sister, my other cousins. But a consensus is reached, and we might argue in a boardroom and with the other senior management team, but when we leave the room, we're all on the same page. We might not agree with that decision, but collectively, that's the decision that has been made. So you've got to go with it. So I think over the past couple of years, I've learned there's no ego and there's no I. It's a family business, and it's not my business. I like to think I'm an integral part of that business, but it's not mine. There's various shareholders and various owners of the business, and we've got to do what's best and deliver to all the shareholders.
Yeah.
And I think that's great advice, whether you're in a family business or, you know, that piece of when you leave the room, you leave the room.
Yeah.
And you're on the same page and there's no back talk and there's no going back. You're agreeing that that's the direction that you're going to make. And I think we see a lot of things that aren't that way in leadership teams, and you see nothing that erodes trust with a leadership team quicker than that.
I think it's also a respect thing. My father's the elder statesman, he's a chairman, and generally he'll be the final one that makes that decision. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes don't always agree with it, but at the end of the day, it's a respect thing. I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for him. Mm-hmm. So it's very much, okay, get on with it. That's a decision, son.
But it's stimulating an environment where people can have a conversation, use their voice, but then them decisions, you then take the united front externally. And I think we talk a lot about that with leadership teams around taking the united front and then cascading the same page message throughout the business, whatever the decision or wherever the decision's been impacted. But it's really important. And that is probably even more tricky to navigate in a family business. But we see it in ordinary leadership teams where there maybe isn't like partnership leadership teams where there's multiple partners and they've all got a stake in the business and, you know, they're taking a vote, or where there's not like a definitive hierarchy. That's actually quite tricky.
Yeah, I'm currently not doing a course, but I managed to get something from Harvard University, and it's quite specific. It's how to succeed in a family-run business. And it's a good read. I'm currently reading that. It's about 250 pages long. But it's amazing how many things that I've read out of that are so true.
So integral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're integral. And I think as a family, you've got to have an understanding and you've got to make sacrifices. And, you know, my wife's done it for 15 years. I've been with her for 15 years. And, you know, she's my rock. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be in this position. Yes, financially, my dad's driven the business. But it's my wife that's allowed me that platform to go out, and she knows how important my work is to me. And, you know, she is the most integral piece of the jigsaw in my life, along with my two kids, because she's made selfless sacrifices and she continues to do so. But it's just that understanding of, she knows how passionate I am about my family business, and she's part of a family business as well. Her dad runs a very successful family business, so she's navigating it through herself, so she probably understands.
You've got shared commonality, yeah, and shared experience. Yeah.
And she's always there as, you know, a calming influence. I could have the worst day the worst day at work, but when you get home and you see your kids and your wife's there, and she's been with me for 15 years, and she knows by the look on my face, mm-hmm, if I'm in a good mood, if I'm in a bad mood, if I need some space. And she's a solid life partner. I'm privileged to be married to her. I don't know what she's doing with me.
But you know what? It's that support system. Mm. You know, it's when you are running a business or you're in a high pressured role, who do you have around you supporting you, right? Whether that's a partner, whether it's friends, whether it's other family members, whatever that looks like, find your network, find your support system.
I've got a really small network. If I take all our head office and staff out of the equation, take my wife and my parents and my brother and siblings out of the equation, we've probably only got five couples in our life. that are really, really close. And there's three in particular that, you know, they tell me how it is. One is my best friend. I've known him for over 25 years. One of them is also my best friend, but he's also a cousin. And him in particular, he says it how it is. He's a very successful entrepreneur as well. And if I need a serious chat, then, you know, he's probably one that I always reach out to the most.
And as a senior person in a business, you know, you talked before about that motivation piece. Sometimes you need people who will tell you how it is, because if you're the most senior person in the room, the likelihood is that their team might not always do that. Or even if you've got others, you know, you've got your dad, your uncle, your siblings, but they've got an invested stake in the business. So you sometimes need that impartial person who has no skin in the game, who can just give you a bit of a reality check.
Yeah, and it's nice getting a reality check, because sometimes, going back to what I said before about motivation, sometimes it's hard to stay motivated, because it's your job to motivate your team, mm-hmm. but then who motivates you? You know, and sometimes you do need a motivation. Sometimes you just need a simple kick up the bum.
Yeah.
And that's why there's four or five mentors and best friends that I've got that are there for me.
What's your vision? And when you came into the business, because obviously, you've got one. You've got that big picture piece in you. So there's a vision there. And obviously you've grown the hospitality side of the business. Did that vision for you come really naturally? Or when you first came in, you know, was some of that directed by your dad and what your uncle were doing? How did that vision evolve? And is it very different to what it was when you first came into the business?
Yeah, it's totally different. You know, fortunately, we've been in the hospitality game for nearly 20 years, but it was a complete fluke how we got into it, because we're very much property.
Mm-hmm.
We buy nice property. And we got our first pub by sheer fluke. We bought a building, Heineken, with the tenants downstairs. They approached us and said, "We hear you're the landlord, do you want a pub?" And that's how it started. And that was very much pushed by my father and my uncle. I was really young at that point and I didn't have a clue how to run a pub.
Mm-hmm.
But what the vision was 20-odd years ago to what it is now, yeah, it's totally different. My outlook has changed more on the hospitality side of things. I'm very much northeast. I don't have any vision or any appetite to go beyond the northeast.
Yeah.
And now that I've got two young girls, I don't want to be married to my sites as much. So our business model has slightly changed. We're owner-operator of a lot of stuff, but we're also owner-tenant. And we're very strategic on who we pick to partner up with us for some of our sites. The vision going forward, I don't know, I'm enjoying it still at the minute. I like to think I'm still quite young. We've got some mega projects happening in the Northeast over the next few years. Two big ones starting this summer. And we're embarking on our first international expansion as well. So we employ about 1,500 people in the UK and about 500 abroad in India. And Dad's working on a huge piece out there at present. He's just flying back today.
Amazing. I was reading about some of the stuff around legacy. Right, and your dad creating a legacy. Obviously, he's created a legacy with this business, but also some of the stuff that he's doing out there. What does legacy mean to you?
For me, quite simply, if you can look back on your career and you've got good integrity, honesty, people respect you. For me, it's not about financials. I think we've been privileged and very humble. I don't think we ever expected this when my dad first came to this country with 16 with nothing, stacking shelves for £30 a week. And, you know, he had two boys at 20 and 21. So I don't think it's financials anymore,
mm-hmm.
particularly with my dad. He's always said he wanted to do a legacy project back home in his hometown. For me, I don't know. I'm still figuring that out. What, you know, the legacy will always be my dad's and my uncle mm-hmm. Bunty's, I think, because they started the business and we're a close-knit family. In terms of my personal legacy, I think that will always be, and rightly so, associated with my dad and Uncle Bunty. I think if I can go to the grave and I'm well-respected and I've got a few friends and they speak nice about me, I think that's enough for me. That's enough.
You know what's really lovely? I spoke to someone a while back about legacy and they talked about it rather than looking back at the end of a journey, like, you know, if you went to your grave as such, but like your legacy can be your daily touch points. It can be the people that you meet and greet every day, the staff that you've supported, the people that have come in, crossed your paths. Like, a legacy doesn't have to be the end of a big project or the handover of a big project. It can actually be in the good and the work that you're doing on a daily basis. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of that as you move through your journey, which is really lovely.
No, you're right. I've not really thought about my legacy as such. I think my legacy is very much being a nice person, encouraging my staff, giving them the platform to succeed, and just being nice to people. I don't like the word nice, but just being a good human.
Yeah.
And touch wood, I think I'm a half decent human being. Got the work ethic, which is really important to me, and that's something that I really want to instill to my kids and my siblings and things like that.
And I think that in itself speaks volumes, you know, that it doesn't always have to be this complicated answer, that actually sometimes it's just, I want to be a good person and do good things.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
As simple as that. And it's, yeah. I think it's, you leave it for other people to judge. Mm-hmm. It's not my place to say that. If you're a good human in the world, good things will happen. Simple as that.
Well, I think that is a lovely note to wrap up on. But thank you so much for joining us. We've really enjoyed having you on.
No, thanks. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Atul.
Thanks.
So let's wrap up with some takeaways from a great episode with Atul. The first, we heard Atul talk about a big leadership lesson in when you come to the table as a leadership team, whether that includes family in a family business or a wider leadership team, that it's so important that you may disagree in the room, but when you leave that room, you have to be on the same page and cascading the same message across the business. We also talked about his unique behavioral pattern mix across Visionary and Integrator. So it would be interesting if you've done the behavioral survey to have a look at where you have a split. So typically we find that the Visionary patterns are big picture, goal focus, initiation, and choices. And the Integrator patterns are process, reflection, challenge focus, and detail. And Atul has a really unique 50-50 split. So that allows him to do a mixed Visionary and Integrator role. If you have more of a skew towards one or the other, as you'll have heard us talk about in previous episodes, it's important to then surround yourself with leaders who have the opposite to balance that out. The final takeaway was the question and the conversation that we had around legacy. And so often leaders can overthink legacy and feel like it has to be this huge, complex process, or that your dream has to be really big and really inspiring. And actually what Atul summarized so beautifully for us was that it's okay to just want to be a good person doing good things, and that actually sometimes that's all the legacy that you need.
Thank you for listening to Misbehave. Follow us so you don't miss out on other episodes.